For more information about the Champaign Center Partnership, visit them on their website at champaigncenter.com or feel free to call 217-352-2400.
And I should take one more minute to thank all of you who donated to our fall pledge drive. We've raised over $20,000, and thanks to the donor who said, "I listened to WEFT go on the air for the first time in 1981. In addition to donations from Champaign and Urbana, WEFT received donations from Canada, the United Kingdom, Beaverton, Oregon, Grinnell, Iowa, and Royal Oak, Missouri. So that just shows you how diverse our listenership is here at WEFT. And WEFT listeners from Champaign-Urbana donated during our fall pledge drive, as well as listeners from other Illinois communities too: Arlington Heights, Coal City, Gibson City, Ivesdale, Joliet, Mahomet, Oakland, Savoy, Saybrook, Sydney, St. Joe's, and Tolono. So again, across the country, throughout the world, and right here in Champaign-Urbana, you can get WEFT radio. So thanks to the generous support of Saruti, the Music of India, which airs on WEFT Sundays at noon, and thanks to the longtime supporter who said their support was for News from Neptune and Daily Blues shows. Again, thanks to all you who did step up and support us during our 2020 Fall Pledge Drive. You know, it's all been a challenge for us throughout this year, and we remain very, very grateful, all of you listeners and supporters who keep this community radio station on the air since it has been since 1981.
Hi, Champaign County's own native child, Tom Baudette, here for the American value of wearing pants in public. Well, not just pants, but face coverings, too. You might have heard there's a pandemic going around. It's on a hard upswing in Champaign County again, and even healthy-looking people can spread it. Pretty people, ugly people, anyone. So for your friends and neighbors, remember to keep your distance from others. Wear a mask when you go out. And don't forget your pants either. Police are real sticklers on that.
This is Dave Monk, your Prairie Monk, WEFT Champaign 90.1 on your FM dial. And this is the 30th of January, nearly the last day of January. And I've been going to Zoom meetings. It's very handy in a way because I don't have to drive to Southern Illinois or other places to go to meetings. I can do it from my office. The first one I went to was Grand Prairie Friends. The Grand Prairie Friends has a rather wonderful annual report with lots of pictures and lots of reporting, and they have been getting accolades for this, and so I would encourage you to go to the Grand Prairie Friends website and look at this, and not only look at this, but to look at some of the other things they do. They have that load of prairie, for instance. They have a botanist that did a summary of the prairie plants, and the pictures of prairie plants are there. And I thought that was rather good. So the Grand Prairie Friends in Loder has worked with the state, has bought a reserve cemetery plot that hadn't been plowed. And they made arrangements with the Nature Conservancy to buy 5 acres of farmland for cemetery preserve. The Nature Conservancy doesn't usually buy rough, tough land, but this was helping to preserve the site. Well, I suspect maybe 6 acres. Then the Grand Prairie Friends bought 9 acres around that plot to preserve it. And I was at that meeting basically because we have 10 miles between Rantoul and Paxton. It's super wide prairie on a roadside. It has an interurban and an old Route 45. And I'd like to see that as a prairie preservation corridor was the old road, which is fairly much intact, kept intact. And it's probably cheaper to pull it out and put in a new one and more effective because it would meet modern dictates. But it's nice to have some antique things around. And the road was a highway. It's 2 lanes road wide. So you have the width that would be suitable for bicycle ways. And there, you're adjacent to an old Route 45. Well, it's not exactly an old route. It's the modern route. And but it's been taken over. The traffic is mainly on 57 and to the west. That means that it's a fairly wide road, and it's wide enough that people can poke around and enjoy. And I often dream of taking eco-tourists off at Kankakee and coming down to Randool and encountering prairie on the way. So there would be opportunity for pull-offs and for kiosks. And I wanted to encourage Grand Prairie Friends to get involved with that corridor, basically owned by the Department of Transportation. But the Grand Prairie Friends does lease a piece on that corridor near to Paxton, about a mile south of Paxton. And it's one that we've worked with a lot. We used to take the seed from the prairie plants there across the road. The modern Route 45 curls back onto the old Route 45 at about a mile south of Paxton, and that leaves a little triangle of area which could be a prairie. So we would take the seed from the adjacent natural prairie adjacent to the railroad line across 45 and put it in that slot. At that time, the Department of Transportation didn't really realize what we were doing, and they replaced it with roadside plantings. But there's still a few elements of the prairie there. We would hope that the fact that we have 9 acres south of the 10 miles would help. It'd be a key to developing that tract. So Stephanie Dobbs, who is in charge of roadside maintenance for nature throughout the state, has been getting the mowing people who have less and less to mow as more and more roadsides have been designated as natural areas. But there are alternate jobs. Sometimes they need a little bit of attention. It's if you're going to plant plants, you need to know their niches, and you need to know what to collect the seed. So there are alternate jobs there, and I would hope that in the future that the people who are have been used to mowing might morph over into preserving the prairie on that site. At the moment, they have gone through and mown the autumn olives and other invasive trees. And that's what I wanted to talk about some. I also wanted to talk about, as a visitor, the area next to Oakwood in Vermilion County. There's about a mile of railroad right-of-way prairie that is very, very good. It's not the world's greatest, but it's what we have, and it's what people, preservation people, has used for seed. And there's a road adjacent to it. It's a shortcut into oak wood. I would like that road to become a shared road where bicycles and cars could still use it, not necessarily too fast, but that would save that piece of railroad bed from being destroyed some, especially if you put in a wide trail. And I don't think a wide trail is necessary, and I wanted to say that too, for the area between Sindel and Oakwood. It's about 10 miles there. That could be a relatively narrow, say 6 or 8 feet wide corridor, without the sides being rip-wrapped. And so early in the meeting, I got to present my case for that. We get 5 minutes, which is generous. Some meetings only give you 3 minutes. And sometimes it's very hard to say what you want to say in 3 minutes. But this is not the first time I've presented that idea, but often you have to do these things over and over from different angles with different people. And there are other people other than myself who also think that that trail, 10 miles, at least it saves the soils. And we don't know much about the soils except that most all the soils in Illinois have been herbicided or chemicalized in some way or another. So if you're looking for to work with natural soils, even though somewhat disturbed, they're on either side of the ballast. And the railroad went in a linear fashion. They had little cranes that would draw a wagon or two, and the rails would be on there, and so you'd put down the ties, and then you put the steel on top of it, and then spike it down, and you would have a railroad to work on. So it was put in a linear fashion. It wasn't exactly destroying the right-of-way, which often is 100 feet wide. So that was my spear there, but I stayed for the rest of the meeting, and it was interesting. There are two new pieces of land that have been acquired by Grand Prairie Friends in Coles County, Warbler Woods area, and the 14 acres is right close to the dam face for the Charleston Reservoir. And there's a bridge involved, but it is hoped that that will be a site where they will be able to have a trail that communicates with other parts of other complexes in the Warbler Woods area. It also goes with a house and a barn, and already they have put in tables, and this is going to become their office in the Coles County area. There were quite a few routine things, so if you go to these meetings, you don't necessarily you're not expected to say if you have to say something, but it's interesting to listen to and find out what is happening. So there's another plot, which is sort of a bluff spot further north around the lake, and that is a worthwhile spot too. So when all these plots coalesce, then you have an area of natural vegetation and ecology that allows bats and other creatures to survive, and there's enough room for them to survive. Even if you have to put in a parking lot here and there, some of this land is still in cultivation. Some of it has been retreat areas for the people who own it, and got to the point where they don't have to they don't use it very much. So there's a sale here, and that means grantsmanship to acquire the land from the Lumpkin Foundation or the Clean Energy Foundation. And I think it involves at least 130,000, which is 14 acres, which is a fairly low price for land, which is means that the people who are selling it are, in effect, donating some of it. These areas amount to probably 1,000 acres now, and there's a budget, and there's a consideration about attesting these as natural areas or accrediting. With accreditation, there goes a number of details. They might not always be what you want or what you want now. So do you delay accreditation, or does that give you a status at the state level and the federal level? And it has to do with grantsmanship. So those are the sorts of debates. At some stage, they would like to have rules and regulations that affect your ability to be sued for damages and things like that. So you have to think about these things. You have to think about long-range plans and connectivity. And so there's about 9 board members. I think they can go up to 12. And it often depends on the people themselves if they would like to belong. They may be part of the Forest Preserve or other agencies like Audubon or Sierra Club. So they may have their feet in several different agencies, but that's okay too. We're very short on the people who can manage these places. In the Coles County area especially, Sarah Livesey has become the CEO, because she knows a lot about this area. She's been on the Forest Preserve for a long time, and she is president of the Forest Preserve. So she has a feet in 2 different organizations that are working for the same objective. And they also have do-it jobs. Some of the organization of these places does not involve a lot of planting or seeding or whatever. And so often when we're asked if we have jobs for people to do, we don't have the sort of do-it job where you can come on a Saturday morning and do some cutting out of invasive species and disappear. That's very helpful, but you need to have that sort of organization, and you need to be big enough that you have jobs that are serious, and you need to have people who can supervise the trees. It's sometimes difficult enough to identify different trees or understory plants. But after a while, you get used to knowing, and especially if you have young people around, you're having to become a mentor in a way, and explain what a teasel plant is and how it has leaves that catch water and seeds that are numerous, and they go into the soil, and there are gene pool there for many, many years. So you hope to decapitate those heads, and that's a do-it job. And Grand Prairie Friends has quite a few of those, and they can get up to 100 people at an open house, and they do it regularly once a month, and that helps because you have a place and it's known and you have friends and relatives that you can meet up with. Beyond the Grand Prairie Friends, I went to the Illinois Nature Preserves Commission meeting. The Illinois Nature Preserves Commission is a spin-off from the Illinois Department of Natural Resources, IDNR, and it has been very innovative, and they've done that without a great deal of funding. So they have a Nature Preserves Commission, and they have over the years sorted out 12 or 13 or 14 ecosystems, and they're quite well documented. They're documented in a vernacular manner with a Post and Jeffords and an interesting book that gives some pictorial evidence of what creatures are in those places and whether they're regrowth succession or whether they're wetlands or dry on a bluff or looking over the Mississippi River. So that definition of the ecology was done a number of years ago, but it has become a principle for other states to do and other countries to do that with their document of their natural areas. And that can be very helpful. It's an extension of what you do. So what you're doing becomes a demo for other people. The granting people often watch for that because if there is an opportunity to take the principle you're working with further afield, that is to be encouraged. The more regular you get, the more presentations for land acquisition and the like, and you get to be known amongst the people who work with these things, then you're more likely to get further funding because it extends. That makes it a little harder for the wee folk, little folk, but it's still an aggregation of wee folk, little folk, and just getting bigger. The Nature Preserves Commission puts its public presentation right at the end of the meeting, so that's different from the Grand Prairie Friends, which puts it at the front. Various cities do that too. The city of Champaign has their presentation at the end. Other groups have the presentation early so that the presenters can leave because they're not necessarily involved in all the city council meeting details. So I didn't present early. I had some of the same sort of arguments to present. And I am always impressed by what they do. They have six or seven regions in the state, and each of those regions will have a regional officer, and those regional officers work with people who are wanting to dedicate their prairies. And so there's a back and forth between the Department of Natural Resources, the Nature Preserve Commission, and individual people who research the plots and present the case for their dedication. I just made a little list of some of the presentations. Where do I have it here? I forgot to bring it over, but the first one was in Southern Illinois, in Jackson County, and that's very different from Northern Illinois. There was not so much glaciation in Southern Illinois. There are river patterns where the rivers cut through in different directions. So the Ohio River has that comes in from the east has old beds that are interesting. They're cut off meanders and a wonderful array of biodiversity. There are also some trails. There's a railroad line that goes through the Shawnee Forest, which has become popular. There are areas where the supervising naturalists will put a block on traffic going through a certain place because this is a place where animals will breed and the traffic would destroy their natural habitat. At other times, the corridor can be used carefully for natural history people, and sometimes people just using the road. The next presentation was way up on the northwest corner of the state in Joe Davies County. And Joe Davies County is in a driftless area. That's where glaciation came and missed that area. But it was subject to flooding when the glacial lakes broke loose. They cut channels through the natural soils. And so Joe Davies County is very interesting from the point of view of species. A cut will mean that the plants on the shaded side will be different from what you would have in the natural area above. And it's an area that has attracted a lot of people from Chicago area, go west. It lets you know what things might have looked like before there was glaciation, driftless area, very near to the Quad Cities, which have an old Illinois Hennepin Canal, which went from, so that you could go from Chicago to the Quad Cities and the Missouri, Mississippi River at the Quad Cities. The counties to the north of Chicago often get a lot of attention because there is a drive to make sure that some of the nature is left. McHenry County has terrain which is sort of morainic, savanna. Lake County has to do with the same morainic material, but they have beaches on the Lake Michigan, which we'll deal with in a little while. Cook County, south of Chicago, has swampland and wet prairie, and right where you have highways going by, there are plots of land that have been preserved. Sometimes there's a school on the land, and the prairie plants you can see coming up through the lawn. It's just so sometimes those sorts of buildings are removed from the prairie. Sometimes they have a right to be there. and you have to work with them. If you go south towards Iroquois County, you get sand prairies where the rivers, the melt rivers from the melting of the glaciers would be dry up eventually, and the loess or very fine glacial till could be blown across the country. And so if you're in the Kankakee area, you can encounter sand dunes. And that leads to a whole bunch of different eco niches. And if you're restoring that sort of place, you would want to be very careful that you research the areas first, and then if you have to plant a tree or a herbaceous plants, you have a rough idea of what you're doing. In Champaign County, Charlotte and Dan Brady have donated a section of bottomland to the Land Conservation Foundation, run by Bruce Hannon and also Deanna Glosser is the CEO there, and that helps a lot. She has been involved with endangered species, so, and she has a PhD in this area, and they have about 60 acres there of where there are mussels and mud puppy creatures that have been on an area behind a levee. So the farmers would make a levee and gather a little bit of land. Those levee areas are not awfully productive anymore, and they're too small for big equipment. So they've gathered up about 67 acres there. And they have a rookery for birds, and it's right adjacent to Allerton Park. So once again, you're having local people do interesting things which augment the natural areas that are places like Allerton Park. The bottomland plot that Dan Brady and Charlotte Brady have designated are just loaded with bluebells in the spring. You can almost look at it, and the trees look like they're growing out of an ocean of blue. And along with all the associated species, but the bluebells are especially interesting. In some cases, you're dealing with natural areas that have been designated to the Department of Natural Resources or to Illinois Nature Preserves Commission, which does the dedicating. But they have horses and bicycles and people and snowmobiles, and sometimes the regular trail goes through the natural areas. So then there gets to be questions about, do we really want horses? Well, yes, if the horses are helping to pay for this, then they have a right to be there. Sometimes the problem with horses is they have hooves that pick up dirt and throw it. So in Jubilee State Park, I can remember the path through the park, the horse territory had almost like levees on either side where the soil had been thrown up. And so having horses is not necessarily without some problems, but the people who own them also surveil them. They have their internal rules. And if you're in a horse club, you would not like to step over the general rules. And that perhaps not on all trails, but certainly they're allowed. Something the same with snowmobiles, and they can create a mess if not controlled some. All railroad beds and watercourses can have some of the same problems. So there was one of those where there were lots of questions about what we do with the horses. Horses are fairly affluent in a way because it costs money to provide accommodation for horses. You have to have hay, you have to, in wintertime, they have to be inside, and it's not easy to work with horses. They may be very friendly, but every once in a while, they are native too, and they can be rather rambunctious and sometimes can hurt you if you don't know how to work with certain horses. Certain horses get to know you, and that is good. I went to an agricultural high school, and we knew which horses we could pick up and put into a dray and use. Floss was just wonderful. She knew exactly what we were doing, and she was very friendly disposed to students that were in their 13s, 14s, and 15s who didn't necessarily have a huge background in agriculture or in working with horses. Horses can be very, very friendly, and they become part of the family. That's so with creatures. Some people have pet raccoons and pet what have yous. And that can be interesting, but at some stage, they act like native animals, and it's very hard to know when that might happen. So it pays to leave nature alone. If you find a bird nest with eggs in it, the parent, male or female, may be away on a short excursion for food collecting, but those eggs can't be left alone too long, and they have to have a certain temperature, they have to be turned over, once again, don't pick up those eggs and take them home, or pick up a bird that may look like it's hurt, but it may, like a curlew, may just be indicating that it has a limpy leg, but really they're trying to take you away from the nest. And the people involved are people who have been fairly heavily involved with nature. George Covington is the chairperson. He has a background in law as associated with natural areas, and he's very good. And when it comes to discussing certain areas, he is able to encourage tabling a debate or doing other things. So towards the end of the meeting, they were dealing with Beach State Park, and Beach State Park has two major plans for putting in groins and balustrades of rock to stop the lake from eroding the beach. There was quite a bit of debate about who would own the beach or care for the beach if it gets washed away. And Fran Hardy was interested to say that if that happens, the natural history people who owned and dedicated the land would still have to be interested in the eroded area and what happened there. So don't assume that because you have erosion that you've lost some of your territory. You still have a responsibility for that area. There were two major attempts to provide groins. Some of them actually create problems further down the lake. There's a second project which is dealing with the same situation a little differently. So there was a lot of discussion about how those two groups can get together. Well, the two groups have been given enough money to do significant things. And yes, the second group is moving down the coast a little bit to make room for both projects. One of the projects, I think, is pulling something like $40,000. And so there's fairly big money involved. You can't put in groins of gravel without you have engineers involved. Do you make it so that it's above water or underwater? Probably underwater. That means it probably has to be put in from the lake. There's really no road that allows for tandem trucks to come in and put in that volume of gravel. I assume it is also an endangerment to yachts and other fishing vessels. So they probably have to put some signage on these groins to make sure that people don't run into them. There's a very nice visitor center there, and it's really right up against the erosion territory. And there are sand dunes from the past that are unique vegetation there. It's very near to Wisconsin, and it's the sort of place that people find as a wonderful retreat. There's sand dunes in the front, but there's also backwaters, and the ecology is quite different from the uplands, which are sort of behind. But this is not unusual, natural work. A lot of dedicated application to this with various departments. So you need someone who's CEO, who's able to interact with a lot of people, people who are in charge of lake shipping, people who are in charge of lake preservation, people who are in charge of invasive fish, like that are invading from the Illinois River. Just a welter of people involved. So you have to be very careful to get input from all, but you also have to move fairly quickly because we're getting more storms and more situations, possibly even more water from melting, to require this to be done shortly. It's not like you sit around and wait 10 years to do it. You have to do it quickly, and the funding may demand that. There are creeks that come out. One is a dead creek, which can very easily get smothered by moving sand. So you have to have people who will look at that and try to preserve. And after that, we had a presentation about herbiciding. there's a new herbicide called dicamba, and it's very volatile. So if you put it on a plant to protect your plant from your weeds, very shortly it will blow into somebody else's agricultural plot. So there's been lots of law cases about this. It has been sort of approved, but really it's a murder for natural areas. So lots of pictures of oak trees that have been, the leaves have been disconvolvulated, and they bend over, they tuck under, they're small, they're where it is, depends where, what part of the season it comes in. If it comes in early, it will leave sort of stunted growth that has to be replaced by other growth. And that's just the arbor side of things. We also have to think about the herbicides for herbaceous growth, because there are species there that, and this is in various places, but there are likely to be species that will lose out and be endangered as without you really noticing it. So that involves the approval of that particular herbicide and other herbicides. It's not just one. It's also depends on the frequency of the herbicide. If you have a cocktail of herbicide which takes out trees that might short to power lines, it'll stop a tree from growing for 3 years. Well, it really takes out all your prairie that's underneath too. So, and you have to know that some of the funding for the preservation is coming from the same sources as using the herbicides, and it's a power base. It's you're talking to people in the 1% that are making a lot of money out of this sort of use of chemicals, and it's worldwide. So how do we think about accepting funding for that is mainly adjudicated by the companies involved rather than by a committee that is more national or international? So you have to figure how you work with money that might be in some respects tainted, because it's coming from agencies that are working in one direction and preserving in another. That means a lot of background work to see that the trees are preserved and the vegetation is preserved. And it also involves creatures, because if the creatures get to use these materials, they also die. So that was a fairly long discussion, headed up by the U of I, the university, doing research. You have to know when you're going to collect your leaves. You're going to have a laboratory. So this isn't cheap stuff. It's expensive. And it requires people who have a fair idea of knowing what they're doing. And that meeting went from 10 o'clock till 3:30, and I was very pleased to be at it and to be able to speak to wide or narrow railroad beds, and to speak to a shared road at Oakwood, and to suggest that the Department of Natural Resources get together in lockstep with the Department of Transportation, DOT, that owns railroad bed in the area, or roadside bed also, in the Rantoul to Paxton area. It's obvious that they would like to do something. Not easy. It involves an old interurban line, which has been long since vacated. The Department of Transportation owns the old retired Route 45, but it could be restored. I would like to think that it might be restored for less than if you take it out and put in a new trail. It's linear. It's on a highway. It can be, there can be rest stops and kiosks for information. It can be an exercise plot. The south end of this corridor abuts into 3 miles of an east-west line, just south of the, there's a little rise in the cemetery, and the cemeteries often are located on such glacial nunataks or little areas. And there is a wetland there that's very reminiscent of Flatville and the sort of areas that had to be drained in Champaign County when settlers were there. There's a transect up and over the Bloomington Moraine, so you get wetland species, you get drier, mesic species and drier species, and you go over the top of the moraine, which is has a lot of wind blown loess, which creates the liatris that's growing there will be 1 foot high. The liatris is growing further down on Drummer or Flanagan soil is going to be 4 feet tall. So you have that range. And in this case, it involves two regions. The Paris region goes from Rantoul, or goes much more than Rantoul, but in this case, it goes from Rantoul to Ludlow. Then the Ottawa region goes from Ottawa to Paxton. And we would like to think that the two regions would get together, but it requires a lot of people working at things. And so if you have a penchant to get involved, join the Audubon or join the Sierra Club, listen to what they're saying, contribute to your ideas, not too dramatically, but carefully, and talk to the people who are key. And Native Plant Society, the Prairie State Conservation Coalition, is an organization that brings together a lot of these small groups to look at state regulations and do you get a tax exemption for keeping a forest? Or is there money for stewardship? And people have spent their lives working at this, and you can tie on. It might be some very small piece. It might be just a photography of a species that is, you think, is endangered. It might be that you will find some do-it thing, like removing invasive trees. It might be that somewhere or another we will have people who can teach about the species, about invasive species, about their niches, and give you an interest so that you might take your interest further. We also have to let you know what we might be wanting you to do. If it's too much, we need to let you or encourage you to know what you want to do in your soul. But then we need to tell you what we're wanting to do with preservation. And then if we work with you for many years, it might be that you become a CEO and actually preserve some of these sites. I see we're getting near to the end of the hour, and I like to leave space for WAFT that helps us to do this, and the Urbana Public Television, which has been generous with cameras and facilitated what we do. It's not easy. We have not been putting in pictures lately, but pictures sometimes replace 1,000 words. So we have some of those on store. So if you have an expertise in that sort of situation, you can help. You can see that happening with the Grand Prairie Friends annual report. The pictures are there that help to show you if this is a barn or a building that has been preserved and you want to use it. So we thank these people and the conservation people who are doing a lot of work, and it's work that not only is local but regional and international, or interstate and international. So think about joining, and it might be just picking up litter, but I want to Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts to know that the litter is not necessarily theirs. So I like to give them something more to do than just picking up adult litter. And so you have to think about those sorts of things. This is Dave Monk, your Prairie Monk, WFT Champagne, 90.1 on your FM dial.
I'm listening to the radio station where the mighty host of heaven sing.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on. If you want to hear the songs of Zion coming from the land of the endless spring.
Hi, this is Jeff Tweedy from Wilco, and you're listening to 90.1 FM Champaign, WEFT.
You can find lots of information on our website, weft.org. You can find information related to COVID-19 and links to valuable websites connecting us to what's happening locally. And one of those websites is the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District, and that's c-uphd.org. And there they give you information on how you can get tested. There is COVID-19 testing now available at Marketplace Shopping Center, 2000 North Neal Street in Champaign. The testing site is located in the parking lot on the east side of the mall. And all individuals with symptoms are encouraged to seek testing at this community-based testing site, but also individuals with or without COVID-like systems can be tested. And there's criteria there that you can see on the website. So check that out and know more before you go.
This hour of programming is brought to you by the listeners of WEFT and by Elliott Counseling. Elliott Counseling Group has a diverse group of 30 licensed therapists providing individual, group, family, and marital therapy. Elliott Counseling is currently offering teletherapy sessions and an online support group to help navigate the emotional aspects of these difficult times. Kevin Elliott Counseling has locations near downtown Champaign, close to Campus Town, in Lincoln Square Mall, and in Tuscola. More information is available online at Kevin Elliott, that's Kevin, ELLIOTT.com, or by phone at 217-398-9066.
First, an announcement. The past months have been challenging both around the world and here at home. We are so grateful for the hours you listen and for your continued support and belief in our purpose of entertaining and informing and serving our community. Whether you tune in for the latest news or to unwind with music, you trust us to be part of your day and curate the information and music that is important to you. If you are willing and able, consider renewing your membership or making a one-time donation to WEFT. Please look to our winter appeal letter and use the supply donation form and envelope to mail in your check or credit card information, or donate securely online at weft.org. WEFT volunteers deeply appreciate your support